Welcome to Social Design Insights, the weekly podcast which brings you the leading voices of the social design movement. I am your co-host, Emiliano Gandolfi, and as always, I'm here with my co-host, Eric Kessel.
Hey everyone, welcome to the show. We've got an exciting two-part episode coming up.
We will be again looking at today at how do we democratize design. And we have a final conversation on this topic with Francis Carré, that is one of the architects that brought a really new perspective in social design, especially because he grew up in Burkina Faso in a small village, and he developed a certain sensibility on design coming from a perspective that is really the ones of rural Africa, but really developing it in a very sophisticated manner.
Francis is such a remarkable character, in part because he's really been able to bridge the world of, you know, design with a capital D with a rural practice that is sensitive and thoughtful and progressive. And I think too often we stereotype, you know, social impact designers as being one or the other. You know, you have to kind of go out to the countryside and do these projects, or you live in a world of theory or something like that. And Francis, I think, has been successful at bringing these two worlds together.
But I think specifically he was successful because he cared for the specific community where he came from, and he really established an entire philosophy around establishing a connection for the architect between him and the community. So the fact that he could understand very well that community inflected his work in a very specific and a strong way, and that became a lesson for all his projects. So his projects are somehow bringing together community knowledge and a certain sensitivity and understanding of nature and of form in general.
And of place. And, you know, I think that's a critical lesson for all of our listeners to absorb as well, is that, you know, I'm sure you get the same, Emiliano. I get questions all the time about, like, okay, how do I go to some exotic place and do impactful architecture? And, you know, I always encourage people to look around them, you know? I mean, you can work in the place that you're from. There's someone there that needs your help as a designer. And sometimes you do your most effective work because that's the place that you know.
And what is interesting of the work of Francis is that he was effective not only working with his community, but he did extremely sophisticated projects like the most recent pavilion at the Serpentine Gallery in London, which shows how these forms of knowledge and this understanding of architecture through a dialogue can have incredible impact and arrive to also a certain level of beauty through understanding that specific relation that the architecture has.
And he's also an amazing storyteller and an inspirational speaker. So why don't we hear him in his own words?
Yes, sure. Let's listen to the interview. Francis, it's a pleasure to be speaking with you today. We have been following your work for a long time, and it's really an honor to have you on the show. We wanted to start with the first question, asking about your origins. Could you maybe bring us back to who is your community and how you started working there?
I was born in a village called Gando in Burkina Faso. Burkina Faso is a little country, about 17 to 18 million people in West Africa. This community is strongly attached, and every relative is supporting or working for the survival of the community. The community is, you understand, the insurance of every single member of that community. The community is that. It is where, in the middle of a sort of community, I was born and grew up and started to think about using what I have learned abroad to contribute to the community future.
And when did you start thinking about architecture as an instrument for that future?
So when I started to do is when I was studying architecture, I was thinking about all of these other people from the community being working in Ghana, Ivory Coast, or other neighboring countries, and to trying to send money back home. So I was a student who was not earning money, and I was thinking, what can I do to support my community? What is my duty? What can I give to that community that raised me up, you know, that contribute to raise me up? I started to think about building a school in that community. So, and that for you needed architecture, which was my profession.
So, Francis, basically, you built your first school, and I guess, you know, it was quite surprising for your home villagers to see you come back with a proposal to build a school made of earth, right? So no sophisticated new building material, but something that was the same old material that your community has been using for many centuries.
Yes, yes. The fact that I came and there was a need to build a school because many kids were still going far. I mean, 15, 20 kilometers far from the village to attend primary education, you know, which is a hard burden for a little kids. So the idea was to build a school, but, you know, I was a student. Where to get that money? So the idea was to build up or to build by using local material, the most available material, so which will reduce the cost. Then I suggested to the community to use clay for that, for the school. But, you know, these people have been working for centuries with clay, and they know that every rainy season you need to fix the building built by clay, you know, because they're not really resistant to rain. For someone like me that have left the village to live in the West, in Europe, who came back and proposed to use clay, for them it was not not a good idea. So they were simply thinking, I am refusing to recognize the reality. The reality was that they fear after a rainy season, they had to fix the school. So that's why there was a big, big rejection. So about the idea of using clay to build a big infrastructure, a school.
And what was the dialogue process? You know, you mentioned everybody in the community being essentially a part of every decision. How did you go about that dialogue?
The dialogue is time consuming. To work in a remote village, in a rural community, like I did in Gando, is to come with time. Time is one of the key resources you need to be able to launch the dialogue. It was about demonstrating. It was about explaining about new method, how you could just use the material that is known to improve its quality and then to be able to use it and to make it resistant to the weathering. So I needed to talk and to explain and to really communicate it for a long time in order to convince the people to go with that material. You cannot come with the idea ready. You have to communicate that idea. So that is what I did. And at the end, they accepted to help me with the project.
After this first school, you actually did an extension and then other buildings. So somehow your community is growing on their knowledge on architecture through the different phases of the work that you're building. Is there a learning curve? I mean, are you experimenting new techniques? Are you understanding new exigencies while you're building one building and the other? How is this proceeding in this dialogue?
What happened in my project is I needed myself to train the people in new techniques, new ideas, somehow in innovation. So we use clay, a local material, but we use it in a way that is different to the past. We had to use machine to make the bricks, you know. We added a little bit cement to stabilize and to make regular blocks. So I started to train the people, you know. I started to introduce them to this new technology, to this new way of making things. And so with every building that we did, the level of knowledge was growing. So it was getting easier to build. And then it was for the community great to see that some people from the community was like skilled, you know, they have learned new technology, new way of making things, and they was able to even work outside the boundary of Gando's in construction sites. So it is a process of knowledge transfer, a project which included knowledge transfer. That is, I think, the most important part of the project. It was first just to have the own labor, and second, with the idea, you know, if one day I'm not able to continue this work, someone from the village will be able to fix the project. So that was the idea how I started. And we keep doing it today.
Would you agree that every project really becomes an opportunity for knowledge transfer, and that maybe that is one of the core responsibilities of the architect, is sort of putting that power into the hands of the people and the communities that they're working with? Is that a fair statement?
Yes, that is a statement. Yes. Every project was an opportunity to transfer knowledge and to train people. And it, I mean, that is the one of the key elements in my work and the success of the project. Yes.
And it surely shows in the results, both in the way your project results respectful to their context and in the way they are maintained by the community. And with this account on the architect being a catalyst of local knowledge, we're taking a short break to make sure the statement sinks in. This is Social Design Insights. We will be back in a few seconds with more pearls of wisdom from Francis Carré.
Welcome back to Social Design Insights. We've been speaking with architect Francis Carré and continuing our discussion about democratizing design. Coming up, we'll be talking about optimism, where Francis finds it, and how to make it contagious. Let's dive back in.
And it surely shows in the result. And what is the form of inspiration? Because, I mean, your architecture is somehow very modern, very essential, but also it's clearly inspired by something that is more earthly, and somehow it always seems very much rooted to your inspiration in Africa. So what would you define as your form of inspiration?
My inspiration is what always nature and then people. So trying to consider this, so by every single project was key for me to succeed in my buildings. So if I'm talking about nature is the material, but nature itself, how it's done, how a tree is standing in the landscape. You know, you have some trees in the desert that are there, they can survive. So I always use all of these, but then the people, and then to add it with a lot of optimism just to keep pushing the project.
How do you nurture that optimism? I think a large part of our audience is young designers that are seeking ways to change the world. And, you know, there's a lot of frustration out there because, you know, people work in communities where resources are constrained. And I guess I've always thought that, you know, another role for the architect is promoting that sort of optimism. Tell us a little bit about that. When you have an inspiration, as Emiliano mentioned, and you're trying to move a community in a particular direction, how do you pass that inspiration that you have along to that community?
I think first, there must be a need in this community, and there must be a will to do a project. So it's a demand, you know, there is a need, and then you start. But I think optimism is the key to be able to succeed. So you have to be optimistic for the future, for the ideas you have, and so the people will follow you. And I'm always open, really, really open and enthusiastic to learn new things, because the cooperation is always, I'm not simply giving, I am getting something back. And that is important to really to say. Sometimes we miss the time. So time is always precious for people, especially from the West. But with enthusiasm and time, I think everything is possible, really. Everything is possible.
Francis, I wanted to ask you something about your work in Gando. You built some education facilities and you're talking frequently about development. So I wanted to understand better, how do you think architecture can actually bring forward economic and social development in your community?
I can't say from my experience, you know, that if you are living in a little community like my own in Gando, so where not everyone is owning even a bicycle, you understand, a bicycle. I don't talk about car or motorcycle. And suddenly you have a building like that, that we did using mostly local material or getting all the people from the village to be involved. You are raising the beliefs of the people, the belief in more than just, you know, a little building made out of clay, because people see there is still something that we can do and achieve something more. And these reflect the economy also, because the young people that have been trained with me are building in many, many building sites in Burkina Faso. While I'm talking to you, there must be about 6 building sites running. In each single one, you have, I cannot say you how much, but the core team may be 15, and they must have more than 100 or 200 people, depending on the project and the material you use, because you use different material. And so they travel and they recruit people and train them. And these people, if they're good and want, they become part of the team. But believe me, most of them want to be part of the team. But for my people, if they go back home, what they're doing, they just earn money. That is what they bring back to feed the family. So I want to say that from my experience, I have learned that my people can stay not far from the village and earn money and feed their family. They don't need to move anymore to places like Ivory Coast or further in Africa to work, where they stay for years and many of them never come back just to earn money. So I think the work we have done has opened more opportunities to the village than, you know, it's not just building. It is about trainings. It is about job opportunities. And it's about awareness, but and proud, you know, if suddenly, so just to say you, if an ambassador from the U.S. who is based in Burkina Faso, in the capital city, just come and travel to Gando to visit this little school, you don't know how proud people are about themselves, because they had me as the initiator, but it is their work. They could explain to this high personality how they took the clay, how they mixed them, and how they made the brick, and how they built it. And it, you see that you're raising the pride of the community.
So it sounds like architecture is almost inherently an act of development if it's done well and it's done with love.
Yes, that is. But we have to be careful and not to think it's an easy task. It's really very demanding. It is time consuming. You have to be resilient. You have to know what for you're doing it. In the past, when I was doing it, I knew I was doing for it for my community. So I had a duty for that community. So it was like, good. You know, I was enthusiastic to be able to use myself for the benefit of my community. But at the end, architecture has become a catalyst of development. Yeah, I can say that.
And Francis, I mean, while architecture has become the catalyst of development, I was wondering if you could make us some examples of what are the contributions or the lessons that came from this dialogue with the community. Because now you build several buildings that are quite different in technique. So
yeah.
How did this dialogue, inflect into something that was different from what your initial plans were?
So what I have done and what I'm trying to do is always to change the technique, to improve the techniques. Doing so, people know that is about seeing a model and try to adapt it. So seeing a way of making things, learning a way of making things, and try during a process while doing another project to improve it. So this way, you will not have these cheap box that we know that are spread out in every places in Africa. I wanted the community to be a good a motor of innovation. This was my goal. You know, a voice like mine is still weak. You cannot oppose it against the big structure that just goes somewhere and think that we'll have a little more model and spread it out. Like we know about affordable housing. I want my people to be able to transform that idea and not wait for someone to come and replicate 100,000 times the same model, which is segregation, let me say.
You've been listening to Social Design Insights with Eric Kessel and Emiliano Gandolfi. We'd like to thank our guests of the week, Francis Carré, for his wise words of inspiration and for his leadership in the field over so many decades. This has only been part one, and you can find part two of this interview currently on our website at currystonedesignprize.com. There you'll find a wealth of additional information about Francis and his good work, including galleries and links to further your research. Social Design Insights is an initiative of the Curry Stone Design Prize and the Curry Stone Foundation. If you haven't already, please find us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter for all the latest news on social impact design.